Hey, Dad, and welcome to the Family Man Show. It's been a couple weeks. Wasn't here last week. I'm not sure why I wasn't here last week, but we're back on. I hope to do it, like I said, every week. I'm glad you chose to spend 30 minutes of your life with me today, and I really appreciate that, and I don't take it lightly. In fact, we put a lot of thought into the show. Actually, we don't. We don't put very much thought at all. I spent a few minutes scribbling things down. Someone asked just recently, maybe a little online interview, I really like the Toddcast, so how do you come up with different shows? And I'm like, well, I turn on the mic and then I begin. But I do think about it, and in fact, please don't ever think like this is a really show. This is more just like you and me hanging down in my office, which is in my basement, in a little room that's about 7 by 11. The ceiling is about 4 inches over my head when we moved down here. This is one of those old houses, you know, 1905, and the basement, they didn't plan for heating ducts or wires or pipes, so, you know, it's just a root cellar. It's dry, but then, you know, they have all those floor joists, and then when they ran the pipes, they just ran them just a little bit lower, so if you're very tall and you ever visit my house and you want to come down to my office, you're going to have to duck. But my office is nice and warm. It looks a little bit like a hole in the ground, but hey, I like it. It's filled with all my stuff and all my junk. By the way, I was thinking about having a contest. You know, all the things you can see from your desk. I mean, just as I sit at my desk, all the things that I can see. My desk is covered with clutter. I've got an I Like Ike sticker. I got snow globes and all those utensils that you might use on a regular desk. I've got 2 bottles of hot sauce that only one has ever been opened. Some pictures of my beautiful bride. And I've got on my wall a sock, a Buzz Lightyear sock that we got in Disney World 1 year. We don't know where the other sock is. I think it was for Ike. I've got some old pictures. I've got drawings taped all over the place of the RV. And I can see a little reddish chrome plasticky lobster that we got when we ate dinner at Red Lobster. The only time I think we've ever eaten a Red Lobster as a family, in Duluth, Minnesota. And they gave us these little necklaces. So we have those. I've got a candle over here just in case of an emergency that my daughter gave me for Christmas. In case we have to come down here and light a candle. I've got a lock of hair. I think it's from my wife stapled to the wall here. I've got all kinds of little doodads and knickknacks and junk everywhere just to remind me of what really, really matters. Because, you know, this family thing that we do, this dad thing that we do, that's what really, really matters. And I do want to, you know, just draw attention to that we have a lot of people to thank for that. In fact, yesterday was the 70th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. I just read just a tiny little article about that. Actually, someone emailed me an email as well. Rob Blair, if you're listening, Rob, I think sometimes you do. Rob, thanks for forwarding that email about Pearl Harbor. And apparently, there's a gathering. I don't know if they gather every year on December the 7th, but this group who are they called? The people who survived that, the people who were in the battle. This group of men is dwindling in numbers. In fact, if you think you were 20 years old, now you'd be 90, right? So if you're 25, 95, I mean, you'd be up there. There aren't very many. In fact, this year, after the meeting, they're going to disband and they won't meet again, which is kind of sobering just to even think about it. I had the privilege of being there with my family and to stand on the USS Arizona, the memorial, and look down into the water and see the shape of that hull that has over 1,000 men still entombed inside of it. Dads, you know, dads who never went home or never saw the children that were yet to be born. So this dad is very thankful for all the sacrifices those dads made for us so that we can have the freedom to be bothered by our children, to be, you know, overwhelmed, to have houses that are falling apart. And I am thankful. I am truly thankful. But things are going pretty good in the old Wilson household. My wife and I, we got to spend a whole day and a half away from our children because now we have an 18-year-old. Our kids have always been capable of, I've always thought anyway, that they could watch over themselves. And I thought they could even spend a night. But we never had an 18-year-old. And I thought, you know, I wouldn't want the police knocking on the door and go, where are your parents? So last 2 nights ago, on Tuesday night, I spirited my wife away and we went to Chicago, the Windy City, just a couple hours to the west of us, here in northern Indiana. We went to Chicago for the day, spent the night in a hotel, and which was nice, and came back yesterday afternoon. Had a good time. It was windy up in the Windy City. It was cold, just the way I like it. It felt very Christmassy, and we did some fun things. You know, I didn't tell my wife what we were going to do. I knew she thought we'd go shopping, and we did a little bit of shopping, but we went, first of all, we went to a, the site of a movie. Maybe you've seen While You Were Sleeping. It's our favorite couples movie. And we watch it every year, and we've already watched it this year. And I thought, oh, well, I'll look up on the internet and see where the house is, because they make mention to being in Chicago, and it looks like Chicago, and it is Chicago. And the house they give the you can find online the house where it was at, and we went over to it, pulled up to it, and it just looked like a normal house. Actually, I wasn't even sure it was the right house, but after gawking at it for a little while, we determined it was the house that the Callahans lived in. And so I went up on the front porch and looked in the window, and it was their house. Nobody was there, so I couldn't knock. And the few people I did ask, one of them didn't speak English, and the other one had never seen the movie. So then we went from there, and we went to IKEA, which was not in the movie, but my wife thinks it's fun to walk around in a big warehouse full of furniture and stuff. Bought a few Christmas presents, and then she said, hey, why don't we stop at that other place that you were, because I was already kind of bummed out, thinking, oh, we're not going to be able to see the other ones because they're too far away. And so, but on the way, it was right off the way, we stopped at Joe Jr.'s building, if you've seen the building, and we went to it, and it was kind of a romantic scene between Lucy and Jack. And we found it, and there it was, and we stood there, and it was really, really cool. Which, you know, I'm kind of getting into this. This may be my new hobby of going to places where there were good movies made. Last week I spoke in Cleveland, Ohio, and I stopped by at A Christmas Story House. Christmas Story is the one where, you know, Ralphie and the Red Ryder BB gun. You've seen it. Guys, you've seen that. By the way, I'm not saying it's a great family movie. This is one of those movies I saw in my, you know, my high school, post-high school life, and I didn't really care if it was a good family movie. So I've seen it dozens and dozens of times. My kids have never seen it. If I was thinking about letting my older kids maybe watch it, and I would have to do a little bit of muting, because I've seen it so many times, I know where to mute it. In fact, when I watch it myself, I still mute it. But anyway, I saw online that the house that was used in that is in Cleveland, and so is one of the other sites, the Higbee's Department Store. So I had to speak there in Cleveland, and I went a little early, told my wife I was going to go early, and I stopped at A Christmas Story House, and it looks just like it does in the movie. It's just like the neighborhood. You know, I was a little on the on guard for looking for Scott Farkas, the bully, who has yellow eyes, and it was pretty cool. The story behind it was this guy who, I guess he invented the leg lamp, and you've all seen the leg lamp, you know, that has kind of that fishnet stocking thing with a big, the major award. I guess this guy, years ago, 20, 25 years ago, he was on some kind of boat in the service, and he wanted to be a pilot, couldn't be a pilot because of his eyes, and he was devastated, and his parents decided to cheer him up, and his dad and mom made one of these leg lamps, and they sent it to him, and he just thought it was great. And I guess he made some for his buddies, and they thought they were great, and so he started making these leg lamps, and he was very successful at it. Well, I guess, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, he sees on eBay that the Christmas Story House, A Christmas Story House, is for sale. The low bid's like, you know, $99. This is what they told us on the tour, anyway. $9.99 and or $99.99. And he calls him and says, you know, emails him, if I offer you $150, we'll take it off. So he buys the house, they fix it up, and on the first day, they had over 2,000 people lined up in the street to visit a Christmas Story House. Now it's a house, and it's got two houses across the street. One's a museum, one's a gift shop. The museum, you know, it's free. I think you go in that for free, and you can see some of the artifacts that were used. You can see Randy's little costume, you know, that his mom wraps him up like warm as a tick. In fact, Randy's there. I'm like, I knew he was there, showed up, and so I kind of kidded, like, is Randy here today? And they said, well, I don't know. And I'm like, really? So he's there on some weekends, especially during the month of December, answering questions. So you take a tour of the house, and that was okay. The tour was okay, but it was fun to walk around the outside of it and to snap some pictures and walk down the alley and see the place where Randy got pushed down in the snow. And then I went over to Higby's and, you know, stood outside the doors there. And that's where Ralphie goes in to meet Santa Claus, who, you know, pushes on his face with his boot and says, "You'll shoot your eye out, kid." So that was kind of fun. And so I'm really liking this. I wanted to, on the way out of Chicago yesterday, I wanted to go just about 30 miles north or 20 miles north of Chicago to where the Home Alone house is, where the McAllisters, oh, I just couldn't think of their name then, the McAllisters, where they lived in the show. And I'm going to have to do that another time. My wife didn't think we should take the extra time, and so she may not get into this as much as I do. But I think it's kind of cool. Anyway, it was fun going to Chicago with my wife. It was fun holding hands. And just a little heads up, if you ever plan to do that, you know, don't go with very many expectations, because sometimes it takes your wife a little bit, if your wife is like mine, it takes her a little while to unwind. And sometimes, you know, it takes me zero time to unwind. I'm just like, I'm unwound, ready to have fun. And she's still thinking about Christmas gifts and buying things. And did our kids remember to do this? And I'm like, what kids? Do we have kids? I cannot remember my kids. And so sometimes it's easy, or wrongly so, sometimes it's easy for me to be selfish and think, you don't even care to do this, you know. And it can make me be a little introspective and maybe a little pouty. And sometimes you can ruin that moment. Thankfully, that didn't happen. It was on the verge a couple times, but we pulled it out, and my wife is understanding, and we had a really, really good time. That was that week. We're back into the groove now, and we're into the Christmas swing, full swing. Even though I haven't got my wife anything for Christmas, I told her the other night. I said, "Don't buy yourself anything, because you know I need some gift ideas." I do have some ideas. I'm not even going to mention them here because I'm afraid someone might tell my wife, or my wife might listen. But I've got some ideas, and you need to have some ideas too, because, you know, there's nothing worse than a husband, this husband, you know, running out a day or two before Christmas to run out to the CVS or Walgreens and pick up whatever he can find, you know, beef jerky and, you know, some cheap little jewelry at the counter and a box of chocolates. You know what that conveys? Exactly what it is, you know, that you didn't take any time to think about it. And usually the Walmarts and the malls are a madhouse of humanity, dad humanity, right around the, you know, that Christmas Eve, because that's what dads do. You know, tell me what kind of impression that makes on a wife. It just says you're not very important. You're not worth the effort to thoughts. Or, you know, when we were dating, we spent all that time thinking about what could we get our girlfriend or the, you know, that special person something. And once we get married, we just, you know, kick it into neutral or reverse maybe. And we don't take any time. Even worse is when a husband says, "Oh, honey, I didn't have time to get you anything," or "I couldn't think of anything." You know, shame on us if we do that. So maybe after this is over, or you can pause this and spend a couple minutes, you know, with a pencil or paper and writing down, or your iPhone, and writing down the things that, you know, some ideas for your wife. Just go by the things that she buys other people. If she buys people jewelry, that means she likes jewelry. If she buys people fragrant soaps, that means she likes fragrant soaps. If she buys people, you know, hats made out of beer cans, that means she likes those things. So make your little list and then get a move on that Christmas list for your wife. I know tonight is our second Advent at our house, and if you've heard me talk, you know that we have Advent nights at our house. Last week's we made a little craft that I had my daughter work out. We made these little gift tags made out of felt, you know, we cut out the shape, put a little bit of glitter on them and a little piece of paper on the back or cardstock, and we'll stick those on packages. So that kind of serves two purposes. And then we always read a story. We read a little portion of the scripture. Last week was a prophecy candle. This week, I think, is the Bethlehem candle. And we're going to, you know, read a passage out of Micah about how he was going to come from the town of Bethlehem Ephrathah. And so we'll read that, and then we'll read a story. Last week we read the something of Jonathan Toomey. I don't know what the rest of that title is. But we've got, you know, we've written all these Christmas stories that we sell. We have five of them, Cootie McKay's Nativity. We have Captain Chaos and the Manger Blaster. We've got The Stranger. We've got The Bishop's Dream and something else. Harold Grubbs in the Christmas Vest. I think I might have missed one. But we've got five out, so we might want to read one of those. Or I still have some others that we haven't published yet. They're available online if you'd like. You can get your stories, but you got to act fast because we're running out of time. And then I think we're even thinking about maybe making some Christmas cookies for a craft tonight, or we might just play our game to Bethlehem. You know, I've played this game 1,000 times. I think I can't play it another time, but my kids are already begging to play it. In fact, my wife was, she was going to play the Christmas game to Bethlehem, about a week and a half ago with just a couple of our kids. And Abraham, my 10-year-old, said, "No, I want everybody to be there." You know, that's what they want, Dad. They want everybody to be there. They want you to be there, not just, you know, part of the family, not just a chunk of the family, not just mom and all the kids. They want you as a dad and all the kids, because there's something good and family-ish when we're all gathered together. And so we might play that tonight. Again, you can get your copy of the game to Bethlehem at our website. But again, order fast because you're going to run out of time. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. I was going to mention, too, we went to the movie. We have a dollar movie theater about an hour from us. I mean, really, a dollar. You pay a dollar. In fact, on Tuesdays, they're 75 cents. Can't beat that. So, you know, you got a family of 10 of us, or 10 bucks, as opposed to the, you know, $75 if you go, or if you want to watch in 3D at $11.50, that's over $100. That just blows me away. But we went to Dolphin Tales, and that was another side of a movie that I've been to. Ha! I've been to the actual Clearwater Aquarium there in wherever it is, in Sarasota, Bradenton, up in that neck of the woods, Clearwater, Florida. And we saw Winter, the Tailless Dolphin. It was an okay movie. You know, it wouldn't be my top 10 or top 50, but the kids liked it, and it was kind of fun to go with them. I think that's all my light talk that I've made it through all that kind of stuff. And now this is the winging part. Not the winging part, because I was thinking about it. I got an email just yesterday. I'm going to clear my throat. Sorry, I should have a button for that. I got an email just yesterday from a dad who had to make a job choice. And he was, you know, he didn't feel like his job was very ethical, some of the things they were asking him to do. So he wisely quit his job. And then he took another job. But now this job is demanding a lot of time away from his family. In fact, it might be as much as, you know, over 10 days at a time that he'd have to be away. He'd be home then for a few days and then away again for another 10 days or more, 15 days. And he is feeling the pressure that he's blowing it in that area. He's surrounded by men who are in the same job as he is, who are divorced or getting divorces, who remind him, older dads, to spend time with your young children while they're young. And that's good that they are. And so he's like, "What should I do?" You know, he's in turmoil, and I'm going to write him today, in fact, and share some of the things we're going to talk about right now. Because, you know, that's what separates the men from the mice, or the dads from the rest of the world. We dads, we don't do what makes sense. We do what is right. You know, it doesn't matter if it's not about money. It's not about any of those things. It's about doing what's right. You know, families need their dads. They do. And the other truth is, dads need their families. You know, I see lots of dads who function separately. I see families who function without their dads. They, on the outside, it looks good, you know, and they look like they're doing okay. But inside, they're struggling because kids need their dads. I can remember speaking at a conference, and there was a grown lady who was telling me about how her dad worked all the time, and she had tears in her eyes. And she said, "Todd, keep reminding those dads that they need to be with their kids. You know, keep reminding those dads. So if you're one of those dads who spends a lot of time away from your house, hey, hear her words, feel her tears on your shoulder, that your kids are going to say the same thing one day, you know, because your kids need you. And so, you know, there's, you know, and I'll hear dads who say, yeah, but I've got to work. Baloney. You don't have to work. You know, you have to work. You have to support your family. But I don't think God asks us to make those sacrifices of our children, of our wives, for whatever. I think he's big enough to supply those needs. He's big enough to fill in the gaps, because I think that's what he wants. I think he wants you in a position where he has to come through. I think he wants you in a position where you're doing what's right no matter what. I mean, that is what I want for my children. I want them to, my sons, I want them not to feel all the responsibility. I want them to do what is right no matter what. Not to get caught in some kind of golden handcuffs or even some silver handcuffs or even some steel handcuffs that are just good, you know, secure jobs where they have to make sacrifices. I think very highly of those dads who quit well-paying jobs just so they can be with their families more. And so I'm going to tell this dad, you know, if you're away too much, then I'd quit that job. You know, and I'd quit another dozen jobs if I had to work at Pizza Hut, you know, or had to do something that I might not like just so I could spend time with my family. I would do that. If I couldn't find anything, I would step out of a limb. I would begin to lighten the load. I'd get rid of my house. I'd get rid of my cars. I'd do whatever it took. Get rid of my cell phones and my cable and my Netflix. And I would reduce the load so that I could spend time with my family. You know, there's going to be a day when your family's all grown up and you're going to have all the time in the world. And then if you want to spend more time doing your thing, go ahead. But I think this dad is very wise for knowing that he's got to do something. And, you know, in the back of his head, he's kind of revealed to me that he'd like to do one thing. He's always wanted to do this one thing, but it's been a little scary because it's not a sure thing. You know, it's a time where he could spend a lot of time. It would give him a lot of time with his family, but it wouldn't bring in a lot of bread and butter right off the bat. You know, maybe this is the opportunity to do just that, to show your kids that you're their hero, because they will look at you one day and think, wow, Dad was so brave. He didn't take the easy route. He took the best route. And, you know, it's not just about them thinking you're brave, because one day they're going to have families themselves, they're going to have their own families, and they're going to be following your example. So if you work a lot, they're going to probably work more. If you make sacrifices of your family, they're going to make sacrifices of their family as well. Your wife may be able to handle it. Maybe she hadn't left you. Maybe she hasn't broken down. But their wives might not be so fortunate, and their marriages may not survive like yours has. So you need to show them. You need to show them how to be the dad. I hope I've done that. I hope I continue to do that. And I want for this dad, I want him to do what he believes to be right. What he believes to be right. Now, everybody's going to tell him, oh, that's not right. Why would you ever take that? Why would you do this? This is going to be a secure thing. But he already feels it. He already feels God's voice working him. I'd never probably go to a dad and say, you're blowing it, Dad. You know, you're wasting your life. But, man, if you're feeling that whisper of, you know, the whisper of God, you better do something, because time's going to run out. And he's already gone through some cycles of being away for, you know, several days at a time. You know, those are times that you just can't get back. You can't get them back. You know, when I was gone, and I think I mentioned this last time, I was gone for a couple days in California. And there was a time my wife called me and she said, you know, I really needed you home. And I was just gone for a couple days. And I thought, because I needed to be there. You know, when we're gone, we miss out and we put our wives in a predicament and our children miss out on having us there too. So, Dad, let me just encourage you, if you're listening, do what you know to be right. You know, God's telling you to move it in your heart. You've already told me what you know is right. Just do it. You know, quit listening to everybody else. Quit listening to your fears and do it. You know, I know this dad already has my book, Dream Big, but you maybe need to read it again and do it, because we're running out of time. And it's going to be over before you know it. And we don't get any do-overs, as we've said lots of times before. And you just need to do it. Not only will you be your children's hero, but there are a lot of dads out here right now who need to hear that the water's not so bad, that the sharks aren't so vicious, and that they can survive if they step out in the faith. So, and you know, maybe that's the important thing, the faith part. You know, we don't just step out because it's the brave thing to do. We step out because that's where God moves. You know, that's where God takes care of us. And I've seen it. You know, I can remember talking to a guy who said, yeah, Todd, but you got to cut your own grass. And what he meant by that was, you can't just say, well, I'm not going to cut my grass, and we'll just let God take care of it. Because he was saying, your grass will grow up over your heads. You know, and I didn't ever know how to answer that until about 20 years ago. I was in a car wreck and crushed my feet, broke my knees. I couldn't walk for days and days, smashed my face flat on a pancake. I was in a halo for 51 days. My mouth was wired shut. I couldn't move. I was the color of a chalkboard, gray dust, and I couldn't do anything. I couldn't cut my grass. And guess what happened? God cut my grass. People showed up and God cut my grass. I didn't ask him to. I didn't even think about it. And God cut my grass. So maybe that little nugget of wisdom, you got to cut your own grass, is wrong. You know, of course, you know, we can't just say, well, I'm just going to hang out with my family and watch videos and we'll see what happens. I can tell you it'll happen. It'll be bad. But maybe we need to put ourselves and do things God's way without compromising. And maybe he can fill in the blanks. Not just maybe, I bet he will. I've seen him do it in my life. You know, the first year I did what I do now, I didn't make any money. Second year, I made barely any money. I would do anything I could for a buck. I cleaned anybody's house. I cut anybody's grass. If people needed something moved and they were offering $50, I took it. And we saw God do amazing things. In fact, that was some of the best years of our life. And he'll do the same thing for you, I guarantee. I think he just wants us to step out, to move out into the deep. And so, Dad, if you're listening right now and you need to move out because you're spending too much time at work and you feel it, do it. Don't mess around. Just do it, you know? Okay, the music's playing. That means it's time to wrap things up. Again, I appreciate you. You're doing a great job. Your family may not say it, your wife may not say it, but I notice it, and so does God. What you're spending your life on is eternal. It really matters. You know, your house may fall down around you, and one day it will. You may be a Pearl Harbor hero, but one day that's over too. Nobody cares anymore. But the things that you're doing as a dad, they will always care about. Always. And they will take with them. And I believe that you'll show up in heaven one day and he'll say, good job, Dad. You've done good. So, until next week, have a great week. Don't forget to work on your wife's Christmas present. And if you have any other Christmas presents that need to be done, I've got one I've got to work on. I need to make a note right now so I don't forget. And keep up the good work. You to Dad.